Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is sadly forever over. But here on Posture Recaps Theater, we are just getting started. My name is Ariel. You know, some people call me Floor, some people call me Teefs, but it's not a big deal. I am joined by my co-host, who's just on the other side of these bars. It is Grace. What's up, Grace?
Can I see the sky soon, or is that... Can I do
Grace,
that,
no,
or...
you can't make me cry this early in the podcast.
Yeah, I feel brutal. Like, big warning, I feel like when we did Bo is Afraid, we were like, yeah, if you have kids, maybe hold off on this one. I actually think this one is very similar. I think this is maybe the darkest Marvel movie. Yeah, it's like saddest.
Dark. I would say if you want to ensure that your kids have a wide range of emotions, that you should for sure let them see this movie and experience heartbreak for themselves. At least you'll be with them, because elsewhere in life they will experience heartbreak and you won't be with them some of those times. Yeah. So anyway, subscribe if you want to never miss one of these podcasts, even though the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise seemingly is over. We'll get to all that stuff. PosterRecaps.com/movies for all your URL podcast catchers. Wow, what a movie. Grace, I guess off the top, we can just start. What was your relationship with the Guardians movies overall, and how did you feel about this one?
Yeah, I mean, I really like the first one and the second one. I feel like the first one is probably better than the second one. I feel like the soundtrack from that first one is so good. It's very, you know, the first one is weird, and I really like weird movies. So I feel like it's great. It's such a hit. You know, the Guardians of the Galaxy movies are so much about like found family, which is a theme that really resonates with me, and finding people who get you and understand you. So yeah, I was very excited. Like, this was supposed to be the first movie that came out post Endgame, but because they fired James Gunn and then everybody demanded that he be rehired, it got pushed back a bunch. And so I think it's really interesting to look at it from that perspective, in terms of that this was going to be the first one post phase 4, I guess, and now it's technically the second movie in phase 5. And also, I think the whole James Gunn thing is really interesting, which I'm excited to talk about, just in the sense that this kind of a odd, awful situation for Marvel to be in, where if this movie is good, people will be like, well, that's just because it's James Gunn, and then let's go watch DC stuff. Or if it's bad, it's a bad movie. So I don't know. This movie is fascinating from both, you know, what happened on camera and what happened behind the camera.
Yeah, I agree. I think for sure it's a fascinating artifact, a pop culture artifact, because of everything that you said and all the behind the scenes stuff. And I think, there are things in the movie that feel very meta, whether intentionally or not, some of them, of like, some of these things kind of, you know, it being the end for a lot of these, certainly for James Gunn himself, who now is going off to lead the DC universe. Who don't know, that's like, you know, all the Flash movies and Batman movies and stuff. Some of these actors perhaps not coming back. I think there was some talk, you know, a lot of these Guardians people certainly were not going to come back if James Gunn didn't come back. Like, they were, you know, to your point, the impasse that they were kind of at with some of the cast was they were not willing. They kind of pulled a Friends, a TV show Friends, and were like, we will band together and demand the same thing, all of us, and they will have to kind of bow to what we want. And that ended up being true. And, you know, the end for some of these actors. And in some ways, you know, for me, I loved this movie, to be clear. I think the first Guardians movie is on my Mount Rushmore of MCU movies. It's top three for me for sure. And I do not really enjoy the second movie, only because I think it's a fine movie, but I don't think it's a good Guardians movie, especially compared to the first one. And I think this one feels very, very much like a worthy successor to the first one, especially. I think it's interesting, all the meta stuff that we were talking about, and I think the you know, in the context of the MCU overall, I think for me, this feels a little bit, certainly a return to form of what I wanted to see. I think we've talked about some of these MCU movies more recently, at least for me personally, kind of falling short. And this one feels not just like a return to form for the MCU, but I think in some ways, the more I've thought about it and like the days since seeing it, it almost feels like maybe it's the end for what the MCU is capable of. And that's like a very skeptical, you know, pessimistic view of things for me. But I think if nothing else, worst case scenario, at least we got this movie, if nothing else ends up being good, which to be clear, I think is pretty impossible. I think, you know, there are going to be good movies in the MCU again. It's just they haven't been as consistent as they once were. Especially hearkening back to the, again, Guardians Part 1 time where we were. And it felt like everything was possible with that movie and with that time. And now it feels like there are less things that are possible.
This movie was good. It's like heart-wrenching, and we'll get into the movie, but I had a really fun time seeing this. I actually saw it twice because I definitely fell asleep, and it's not an indication of the quality of the movie. It was that I picked a start time that was too late because I tried to go see it on Thursday night instead of just waiting like a sensible human being who would have been able to go to an early showing on Friday. And then I had to go to Friday anyway, because I had to rewatch the movie. But I really, really liked it. I think the villain is good. I think that it's very funny in addition to being like heartwarming, I think, as well. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed it, and I'm excited to break it down.
I am too. I laughed a whole lot, as I did, you know, as I do with these characters usually. It's so fun. There's so much mileage that they get out of having these characters act exactly as you expect them to act, and then but it's still being hilarious. You know, full credit to the movie and the writing and the acting of, like, even when you fully expect the next exact beat that's going to happen in about 2.3 seconds, it still is like laugh out loud unbearably funny when you watch it happen. There were moments where, I mean, to that point, there were moments where I was the only person laughing, because I could tell, like, you could kind of see the next thing slowly about to happen, and it hasn't happened yet, but I just can't contain my excitement. So I think, yeah, it's a lot of fun, heart-wrenching, like you said, pretty dark. I can't remember, I'm sure this is wrong, but, or it's not going to be wrong, because I'm literally just about to say I can't remember, so there's nothing wrong with that, but I can't remember another Marvel movie, excuse me, where they used an f-bomb.
No, first f-bomb,
you know, it's the PG-13, so the rule is, you know, you're allowed one. And I think, to, you know, just for the record, it is expertly used
agreed that it is used.
So yeah, if it's the first one in the MCU, as you're saying, that's pretty funny, and it felt
first
very notable to me.
Yeah, first f word in the in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Phase 5, FFFF. Incredible stuff.
You know, I had, so, I mean, I was asleep during the middle of it, but I felt like my first viewing, the audience was much laughier, if that's a real word. They laughed that much. Is. And then the second viewing, which was more teens, I will say, did not laugh as much. So it was very interesting to, like, basically within the span of a day, get kind of two very different audience viewings of the movie. Like, I was noticeably the person laughing during the second one, whereas I feel like I was laughing with a bunch of people in the first one. So
yeah, the teens perhaps saw too many olds on screen. Maybe. Yeah. They're like, ugh, these olds, they're not even funny.
Yeah.
But to those teens, I would say you are wrong, and also probably something with an f-bomb.
Yeah.
But it's, if you enjoy, certainly if you enjoy the Guardians movies, I think this is a wonderful, wonderful send off, and you should definitely see it. But as Grace has warned, it is pretty dark. So you should get ready, and you should get those kids ready, get those tissues ready. But now we are going to get ready and finally spill the PSRT, get into some plot specifics. I can't wait to get into stuff. So let's get into it. Here you go, the recap. So we open on the Guardians themselves. Wow, what a twist. They have established a base on Nowhere, which is the head of a Celestial, I believe.
Yep.
from the first one. And Quill is drinking heavily because Gamora doesn't love him back, and that whole thing about it's like something that Grace likes to say on a different podcast, not real Gamora.
That's right. This is multiverse Gamora.
Multiverse Gamora. They are attacked. I was surprised, pleasantly surprised that this happened so early. They are attacked by Adam Warlock, who was created by the Sovereign, who we meet in the second one, I think.
Yep.
And they have been sent to, Adam Warlock has been sent to take back Rocket to bring him back to someone who we don't quite know yet, the High Evolutionary, which I love saying in the accent. And while they fight Adam off, Rocket is severely wounded. Ariel was devastated. That's part of the recap. The med packs that they have that are very nifty and futuristic do not work on Rocket because of a kill switch that he has in himself. They find out that the copyright of that kill switch and the proprietary technology inside him is owned by OrgoCorp. So of course they go to OrgoCorp headquarters, which is the Orgosphere, and they're trying to override the thing. Meanwhile,
which is like a planet that's a base that's like made out of organic material, like no metal. It's all like skin and flesh, and
it's very
blubber, and
it's very. I will say both this and I guess the movie overall is very squelchy. A little bit oozy.
Yeah.
So you know, I guess your mileage may vary on that, but it's not boring. Meanwhile, we start to see a lot of flashbacks of how Rocket was made. You know, he was a small raccoon who was experimented on, and we knew this just like kind of vaguely, just like these very vague details before this of Rocket telling us. But we find out here he was experimented on specifically by the High Evolutionary, and he lived with three of his animal friends who had also been experimented on. We meet Lila, an otter with bionic arms, Tiefs, a walrus with hind wheels, and Floor, a not so creative bunny who, and I mean that name wise, with mechanical legs and a metal shield over her mouth. That's
terrifying.
Pretty horrific. Yeah, it's pretty horrific. Mm-hmm. Very spicy,
but cute, but also like weirdly cute.
Very cute. It's very complicated. The High Evolutionary is shocked to see Rocket. This is in the flashback still. Shocked to see Rocket figure out a fundamental design flaw that both the High Evolutionary himself and the other animal human counterparts could not figure out. So the High Evolutionary is trying to make a new, better Earth that he will also very not creatively later call Counter-Earth. So the High Evolutionary tells Rocket that he is not good enough to be part of this new society that he's building, but because he's so impressed by Rocket's intelligence, he plans to have his brain extracted and the others to be incinerated. Rocket tries to escape with his friends. The High Evolutionary kills all his friends in a horribly emotionally gutting scene. In rage, rightfully so, Rocket rips the High Evolutionary's face off and eat that whatever people are in the Face Off movie. The High Evolutionary's face and leaves Nick Cage. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
In the present now, Nebula hires the Ravagers to help them get an override code to get into this like OrgoCorp thing, right? They retrieve Rocket's file with the help of Gamora, who is a Ravager, but they learn that one of the High Evolutionary's assistants, Teal, has removed the override code. This is so annoying. I hated this. Gamora, because it just felt, and not that like any part of this movie felt like, okay, this is just a plot device. This definitely made sense in the context, but it was just like, oh, they're so close.
Very like, do this, then do this, then do this.
Maybe. Yes, which you know, it at least makes the movie easy to follow. So Gamora thinks that that going after this person who has the override code, Teal, is a trap. But Quill's like, it's not a trap. If you know it's a trap, it's called a face-off, which, you know, goes back to my face-off thing. Wow, look at me. So they head to find Teal, but they are followed by Adam and
Aisha.
Yes,
Elizabeth DeBakey.
Who we met. Princess Diana. It's Princess Diana from The Crown. No, it's Elizabeth DeBakey, who we met in the second movie. They have been ordered by the High Evolutionary, who we find out in this movie created the Sovereign People, ordered by him to retrieve Rocket. The team arrives at Counter Earth, and they are helped by a bat-human hybrid. All these people on Counter Earth are like somehow like humanoid animals. It's very BoJack. Drax, Mantis, and Gamora stay at the ship while Quill, Nebula, and Groot go to the High Evolutionaries' headquarters. On their way, they see that Counter-Earth life is not so perfect.
Drug deals,
very like normal and, Earth, and yeah. You know, to its credit, or I guess not really to its credit, but just to its credit as far as accuracy. Groot and Quill head board the headquarters while Nebula waits outside because no weapons allowed, and she is literally a walking weapon.
Rocket has improved her arm to be a weapon.
Yeah. Yes, it's very like a Mega Man arm kind of thing. Drax gets impatient and leaves the ship with Mantis, and a creation called War Pig that from the High Evolutionary tries to take Rocket while Drax and Mantis weren't there. But thankfully, Gamora is there, and even though she doesn't know Rocket that well, she feels like a sense of right and wrong still, and you know, she protects Rocket, and Warpig is killed by Warlock, which thank God. Quill confronts the High Evolutionary, who reveals that this civilization is not perfect and it's actually kind of like a beta testing thing. We're going to start again on like a new Earth. Adam tries to save his mother but fails, which just gives him like an emotional beat. And as the headquarters is revealed to be a ship, this like mountain that where Quill made his way to find the High Evolutionary, Quill and Groot jump off of the ship in like a very death-defying, interesting scene. But of course, Groot is able to, and they have Teal with them, the guy who has the key that they need. Groot is able to sprout wings, basically, and they land on the floor safely,
and they ruthlessly kill Teal. They just
this was probably the part where I realized, wow, this movie is dark, because Quill like doesn't really care that he dies. I thought they were going to do that thing where like they drop him just in time for him to survive, but no, that guy dies immediately. They don't care. They just need the chip in his head, as you said, and Quill like very savagely retrieves it. Rocket has a vision of Lila, Teal, and Floor kind of in heaven. You know, there's a lot of like white light implications, and Lila's like, yeah, we're good and we want you to come with us, but not yet, you're not done living your life. So she kind of sends Rocket back. He wakes up, thank God. Nebula, Mantis, and Drax are captured and put in a cell with Abelisks, which are like the small children.
Abelisks are the
not
the,
yet
those are the big like
right, the huge things. This is before the children. Yeah, yeah. The big like mouth suckers.
They've seen the children, they know they're in cages. They like help some of them escape, but they get captured and put in this thing with the Abelisks, which are the big like, they're like big, I don't even know, they have lots of teeth, but they
it's like one big mouth but with teeth. And
but they don't eat humans, they eat batteries. So
Mantis, they don't eat humans, that's right. And I think we've met them before, I think in the second movie. Mantis is able to tame them because she has her emotional power. It's wonderful. So Kraglin and Cosmo the dog arrive because Quill called them. They arrive literally on nowhere. Like nowhere is a ship, I guess, and it moves, or or it has the capability to move anyway. And they sync it up with the High Evolutionary ship in order to create like a portal. And
they also like shoot a cannon to destroy it, and then sync up like this like orderly like air lock thing.
Cosmo's such a good dog, even though Kraglin tells her he's not, she's not. Adam attacks again, but is spared by Groot, who says that everyone deserves a second chance in his own language. Rocket discovers animals on the ships and on the ship, excuse me, and learns that he is in fact a raccoon, which I love. I can't wait to talk about this. He is attacked by the High Evolutionary as he kind of wanted, but the rest of the Guardians help him defeat the High Evolutionary. Rocket doesn't kill him, even though he has the chance to. Instead, lets him die on his ship, which is exploding. The Guardians save the rest of the animals and the children. Quill nearly dies when he goes back to get his Zune, but he is saved by Adam, thank God, again. Quill bestows the captaincy of the Guardians to Rocket in a lovely scene so that Quill can return to Earth to see his granddad, who is his last remaining relative. Mantis is his half-sister, but whatever, it's complicated. Mantis decides that she needs to be on her own for a while as well, and she goes off with the Abelisks that she has tamed. Drax and Nebula stay on Nowhere to take care of the children. Gamora returns to the Ravagers, which is like her newfound family. In a mid-credit scene, the new Guardians consist of Rocket, Groot, Kraglin with the arrow, Cosmos, the dog, Adam, Warlock, Phila.
Phila is a young girl. Not really confirmed, but people do presume that this is Phila, who's she's the young girl who's with the group, who's like running on the treadmill, never getting tired.
Right, we'll presume
that she's probably like a future, you know, to add them to the list of the young Avengers that are out there.
Right. And there's also Blurp, which I don't know if that's a real word.
Blurp is Adam's little pet.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. And then in the final scene, in the post credit scene, Quill is having breakfast with his grandfather, who we saw him return to at the very end of the movie. And we learn that Star-Lord will return because the text on the screen told us so.
Okay, Grace. Ariel, I have very actual real thoughts about this movie. There's a lot that I love. I love that nobody really died other than the animals that Rocket grew up with, but they're from the past, so they were dead already. I love everybody's ending. I love like Drax, when we meet him, he's like an angry dad, and at the end he's a dad, and it's like really great. But the credit scenes, Ariel, we have to stop. Like, I feel like I'm being pranked when they make me sit there for like 12 minutes and then it's just Quill eating food. And it's like, don't worry, he'll be back. And I'm like, why? Make it something meaningful. Make it something actually like enough.
I was wondering if it would have worked to switch these, but I almost feel like.
I actually agree. That would have been better.
While it would have been more emotional, it almost feels like. We can't. I this is maybe my mind being trained in the way that you're saying of like now we're kind of used to like the quieter ultimately post credit scene of like whether it's impactful or not. It's just more of like a low thing or a low importance thing perhaps, and the middle one is like the bigger thing. But I agree. I mean, at least I know once the mid credit scene is over, I have a bunch of minutes to at least go to the bathroom, so I don't like feel. Like I'm completely wasting my time waiting for this post-credit scene. But when it's just text, like this is the same thing of like we sometimes we get like 007 will return, or even in the MCU, Captain America will return, or whoever. Like, we don't need to see that scene. We can just give us the text. It's fine.
Well, I mean, so the context behind this is that essentially, like, Dave Bautista and Zoe Saldana are like, yeah, we're never coming back ever again. And they needed basically being like, don't worry, Chris Pratt will still be in these movies, right? That's, like, what happened, right?
They're it seems like
don't worry, Star-Lord will have other movies or he'll be in other movies or whatever. But did Harry Styles break post-credit scenes? Because they put Star Fox in this post-credit scene. And then I feel like there's been literally no information about this guy coming. And are they just worried that, like, they can't actually promise anything because Marvel is so inflexed that like if we actually show a scene that is maybe supposed to be important and then decide it's not important later, whereas instead if we just have like Quill eating cereal, that it's fine.
Like low stakes.
It's such low stakes.
Yeah, maybe. I think, you know, these things used to be so like ironclad as far as the important, like you knew they were going to show you something and you knew it was going to come back. And it used to be like, it used to be much more obvious and tied into things.
Well, the other thing too is they knew what they were building to. And I definitely feel like they're in a little bit of a thing where the next Avengers movie is called the Kang Dynasty. And they're like, maybe not actually Kang. Maybe not.
Well, here's what I like about it. Just before we return to like the greater plot. What I like about it is now Quill is on Earth. So he ostensibly could be in some like smaller Earth-centric stories, like maybe the Captain America movie coming out next year, or maybe I don't know, that's the only one I can think of right now that takes place on Earth.
Thunder, know, like we have the Marvels, Captain America, Thunderbolts, and Blade.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, Marvel's a big part of it, or at least one of the characters in it is definitely like Earth-centric or Earthbound for part of that movie, but the idea of that is interesting to me of like, okay, maybe like Quill on Earth somewhere like he hasn't been back to yet. That could be like an interesting dynamic. Yeah. But at the end of the day, do I care all that much? No.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, what I think it's so jarring from the rest of the movie because the rest of the movie is such a good finale. Like this definitely feels like this is the trilogy. This is probably the best Marvel trilogy. It's probably my favorite Marvel trilogy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, the Captain America one is probably pretty good. They also have like Iron Man, but I think this is, for me, this is the best trilogy. Mm-hmm. And it wraps up so satisfyingly as well. You know, and a world where you could watch these three back to back, and they're pretty good. I mean, I did not watch the Christmas special, which I meant to try and watch before we came on the pod, and I didn't have enough time. Mm-hmm. But like the Cosmo stuff was just like a very fun delay. I didn't really feel like I was missing like that much from the movie. The Gamora stuff maybe is a little jarring if you go from 2 to 3 without watching any Avengers stuff. But yeah. I mean, I think the headline for me, yeah, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I think that's, you know, the Gamora thing, that's the problem with these kinds of movies is, or, you know, the problem and or the, like, whether it's a flaw or a feature, you kind of have to be a little bit more aware of the overall universe.
But even for me, like, watching the movie, I kind of don't really even remember, understand. I know it's like, he Thanos throws her off and then they decide they go back in time and they change everything. And it's like mm-hmm. ultimately like the Black Widow Hawkeye thing, but like how that means that Gamora is like a different version of Gamora. I don't know, but like that's really worked for me. I love that they didn't get together at the end of the movie. I love that they kind of are their own people and they go on. And, but I just thought like everybody ends this movie. And I think the headline for me is like, wow, nobody really died. None of the like main mm-hmm. Guardians people really died. And on one hand, like I am somebody who does really like, I do like death in my movies and I want it to be sort of final, but there's a way in just which this really worked in terms of getting essentially the epilogue scene of like, what's everybody up to? And like Drax and Nebula being parents and Gamora going back to the Ravagers, Quill going to with his grandparents, Rocket being the captain of the new Guardians, Groot hanging out with Rocket. I really, really loved it in terms of like where it left everybody off in the movie. And so I actually kind of like, the more I sit with it, I love that like these can be the endings to these characters that doesn't have to be that they died because they're, you know, part of Marvel. So I, you know, in terms of like where it ended the trilogy and it being the third of the three movies, I feel like it does a really good job at like landing the James Gunn plane, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he absolutely turns out to be a much better pilot. I'm talking about James Gunn than Gerard Butler in the movie Plane, who, you know, is a good pilot.
I mean, he's a good pilot. Yeah,
it's fine. The analogy will somehow make sense. I think, yeah, I agree with that a lot. I think even though it's to the movie's credit that the fact that no one dies doesn't feel like a cheat because it is the ending of a lot of these relationships or in a lot of these characters in some cases, as you said, and you really do feel that loss. I think the movie absolutely does an incredible job of earning every single moment, every single emotional beat, so many like little inside jokes or, you know, between the characters and, you know, picking up on, you know, pulling threads from the previous movies, and whether it's a comedic beat or an emotional moment, just really, really building on everything that has come before and feeling like such an organic continuation and ending for a lot of these characters. I think the, you know, because to me, it really felt like, and there are people who are kind of seemingly arguing whether, you know, the Rocket stuff was planned all along or if it's something that they had like kind of decided to do. It, to me, it doesn't really matter because what matters is what it feels like. And does it feel like it was the plan the whole time? To me, it does, because especially like in Endgame and in Infinity War, when you get Thor in there and conversations that Thor had with Rocket, there is so much darkness in the Rocket character that was very, very interesting for them to just kind of start to explore. And then in this movie, like ultimately mine a lot from like so much loss and so much pain that you kind of didn't really know. And then when, you know, he loses all his friends at Endgame and he has a wonderful like moments with Nebula, he became the most interesting character to me in those moments. And it was fascinating that they had so much runway. They felt like they had so much runway for him to just explore his history, his past, everything that made him the way he is, and still have room to give all these characters send-offs and moments. And you really, there isn't a single character I can think of that feels like short-thrifted in the movie, even the characters that don't have as much screen time or as much like importance to the plot as other characters. It's really impressive, and it's really, it has like it has an energy and it has a drive that that keeps it going, that keeps the momentum in full blast the entire time. And it's a lovely quiet story. Like, as we talk about the MCU, a lot of it is a lot of people's qualms with it is it feeling like too big or too messy or whatever. This is, even though it's a story that takes place in space and they go to all the different places, as we said, it feels so small, and it's really about this family trying to save one of their own. And like, what's more relatable than that?
Yeah. And then ultimately, once they've saved him, like saving all of these kids and these animals, you know, it's like a really powerful story. Even the High Evolutionary, I feel like, is, we'll talk about him as a villain, because I think he's really, really good. I think it's a really good performance by Chukwudi Awuji. But this is a story kind of about, like, you know, I would not call him Rocket's father figure, but like, he is his like creator, you know. The High Evolutionary is talking about like this at one point. Yeah, it's talking about one point about like, someone says something about God and he's like, God isn't here, that's why I stepped in, you know? So it is this like father figure type story. And then the story about like, when you, you know, when your father is the High Evolutionary, where do you turn to? Which is like, you know, when he's being captured and experimented on, it's to his three friends, Lila, Tiefs, and Floor. But then when we learn that they, you know, they're gone. And I agree. I think that like, it adds so much to Rocket's story. And I, you know, whether or not it was planned, I know that James Gunn at least always envisioned this movie as like Rocket's you know, backstory movie. And yeah, it's really well done. I mean, they take basically Rocket kind of off the board for essentially almost two-thirds of the movie. It's not until they kill Field and Quill and Groot jump off the ship that then they have the override key to wake up Rocket, and Rocket gets told by his friends that he has a greater purpose, which is just so beautiful and good, and I love it. And so I, you know, the Rocket backstory I think is really well told, really, really good. It explains so much of like who he was before, but also why his heart might open up to like, you know, wanting to hang out with the Guardians, and how upset he kind of is when they're all like, oh, we need to go do our own things, but he's gonna, you know, keep hanging out with Groot and this new Guardians crew. I just thought it was like the Rocket stuff in particular, I thought was so good. But then to your point, like so many people, I mean, everybody gets for my money's worth, like a satisfying story. I think maybe you could argue like Groot doesn't get a ton, but one of my favorite moments in maybe all three movies is this, when Groot says, I love you guys. And I saw someone be like, oh my God, I can't believe they had Groot speak. And I was like, yeah, he didn't speak. He said, I am Groot. But now that we're part of the family, we know what he says. That was like, that's like the, like, rather than a subtitle, they like, we heard him say it because now we're part of the family and we know it. And I was like, I love that. I love that. And I think Kevin had that same read. It's not that Groot finally says something different. Like, they don't look at him being like, oh my God, you didn't say I am Groot. It's just that we can now understand Groot. So like, he also kind of gets this moment. And I feel like the moment with Warlock, he's the one to be like, he deserves a second chance, even if it's Drax who translates.
Right.
So, you know, I just thought, yeah, it was really effective storytelling and a really good way to sort of like wrap up all of the characters' arcs over the course of like 2 to 3 movies, depending on how many they were in.
Yeah. And I think to the group moment point, I think it works to me. It kind of doesn't matter. Like, it works both ways, whether it was like I guess spoilers for Mandalorian, like not really spoilers, but like, you know, the baby Yoda thing of like, he can't talk, like, will he be able to talk eventually? You know, we don't know, like that whole thing. And this, whether this was him like evolving his language or us just understanding, I think they're both emotionally resonant, and it kind of doesn't matter, because what matters, to your point a little bit, is like what we take away from it. To me, like the moment that I think was the most surprisingly effective to me personally was the last moment between Gamora and Quill, like not just a goodbye between those characters, but like a goodbye to that relationship, right? Of like, these two characters hadn't, technically the Gamora that Quill knows is no longer alive, as we've said, and this Gamora turns out to be like vastly different in some ways, but also so sweet and kind in a lot of ways. Like, the moment where she has to be the one to protect Groot is a moment that I love, because it's like, yes, Gamora is going to do the right thing because Gamora always does the right thing. Mm-hmm. And the last moment that she gets with Quill,
yeah,
when she's like walking away from him, and instead of you know, there's a world in which maybe they do try to get, because she is like more and more charmed by him as the movie goes on, right? So there's like a universe in which they do actually get back together, but I'm very glad that that didn't happen, because we, what we get instead is her, now that she knows the Guardians, now that she understands this family dynamic and is somewhat emotionally invested in all of them and with them, she understands the even though she doesn't fully comprehend it or wasn't around for it, she is still mourning this relationship that she could have had with Quill. And she says about their relationship, she says, "I bet we were fun." And they just, like, I was crying, like openly weeping when she said that, because it's such a smart and sweet and tragic way to pay respect to that relationship that she was never around for, as I said, but that she understands why now, and she kind of understands and forgives him for like pushing her so hard in the beginning. And they can, and she can still, both the movie and Gamora can still like pay tribute to that relationship without needing them to be together. And I think it was such a, such an effective ending for her as a character. And then she goes off and rejoins the Ravagers, and it's like, oh, this is her actual family. Like, this is where she feels the most connection, the kind of connection that we know Gamora got from the Guardian. So it's like nice, the other Gamora, the original Gamora.
The
so
line I love
to see her get that.
The line I love, sorry, was when she's, you know, "I'm still not the person, you know, you want me to be," or whatever. And Quill says, "Yeah, but this version of you ain't so bad." It's like, oh, that's so sweet. Because like, I do feel like there's a little bit of like when he's trying so hard to like convince Gamora to be like, you know, the Guardians are who she should, you know, is her family and they looked out for her, whatever. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's trying really hard to basically like kind of convince her to try and love him. And she's, that's just not who she is at that moment. Mm-hmm. Like, she's not the person who's fallen in love with him. And so I do like that sort of like at the end being like, okay, like, cool. Like, yeah, this version of you is cool too. See you later. You go do your thing. I'll go do mine. I really liked it. And I do like the scene where she is upset that they're going to go chase after the High Evolutionary, because she's like, let me off. And Nebula stops her from attacking Quill. Uh-huh. And is like, you know, Rocket is our, like, she's like, oh, I'm family. And Nebula says, mm-hmm. so is he. I just loved all of that stuff. And yeah, like, this isn't really her family, but the Ravagers are her family, you know? So yeah, I thought it was a good send off for Gamora, and very, I thought, unique storytelling. Like, I do think a lot of other stuff would make it so that like she, like the Ravagers would be painted as much more evil.
Yeah.
In this movie, she would like think she needs to be with them, and Quill mm-hmm. would convince her that she actually should be with the Guardians, and she would ultimately choose the Guardians. And it's not that. It's like this very, like, it's like a breakup between two people where you're like, you love each other, but it doesn't work out. You know, you're not good right. together. So
you're just not like quite meant to be together.
Yeah. So I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it really, really was wonderful and so surprising in the best way. You mentioned Nebula. Nebula is a character just like Groot, as I mentioned before, that like I really, really came to love, especially in the light of her loss, like when she loses
you like her eyes,
her very so black eyes,
her dad changes eyes, yeah, but he chose very pretty,
he chose
eyes.
A pretty set. We see her experience loss when she, you know, when the Guardians stop existing because of Thanos, a lot of yada yada-ing as far as like the MCU, but if you know, you know. But Gamora and Rocket were the only two members of the Guardians that did not get snapped away in that in-between time, like between Infinity War and the end of Endgame. And you really did get to see, like, they have that like iconic moment where they hold each other's hands when they like meet again, and they like are sharing the information that they're the only two that remain, like two characters that you never expected to have any kind of like real emotional bond. You know, all those scenes with Nebula and like Tony Stark playing like paper football on the plane, mm-hmm. like Nebula is a wonderful, wonderful character. And, you know, I'm talking about Endgame, and there are so many comps with this movie in a good way, which I think is so fascinating, because this movie feels, as I said before, like so small in some ways. Like, it's a pretty intimate, straightforward story. They have to save their friend, and then they yep. have to like do certain things to save him. And it does feel very wide and sweeping, but like, I think to its credit, it feels like a small story, and some of the best Marvel movies have been small stories, but it has so many moments that are comparable to Endgame, like in the Infinity War 2, like those two kind of movies. Like in the beginning, everyone's fighting separately, and it isn't until the very end that they all come together and get to fight as a group.
That scene where they fight in the hallway is pretty awesome. Mm-hmm, so good. Very reminiscent of the early Guardians.
It's epic, well. And it's very much like, a lot of people are calling it their, some of, if not their, certainly like their favorite Guardians action set piece. A lot of people are one of their favorite, and also some people even one of their favorites in like the entire MCU. And it is so effective. And finally, like, Rocket's back. And like you said, we have spent so much time without Rocket, and this movie, everyone thought that Rocket was going to die. So when he survives, it's like, oh my God, everyone's together. It's so emotional. But the scene, another one of my favorite moments, and it's an even smaller moment than the one with Gamora and Quill that I already talked about, when because Nebula got separated from the rest of the group, she's not there when they are able to bring Rocket back finally. And when Quill is talking to Nebula, and he's like, where are you? Oh, I'm on the ship. No, I got off the ship. Yeah. Oh God, like whatever. And then she hears Rocket's voice, mm-hmm, and she just stops and she's like, Rocket? And she gets she puts her head down, she gets emotional, she's just so relieved that her friend is okay. And it very much reminded me of like the Endgame moment when Captain America hears Bucky's voice, or excuse me, not Bucky's voice, Falcon's voice over the speaker, because everyone has now been returned. Mm-hmm. It's so incredible, like they get so much emotional mileage out of these very, very small confined moments, and it's really impressive. It's really impressive. And it made me just mourn the loss of James Gunn even more, that he was able to come into the MCU, kind of be like, oh, remember, we could do this. It could be like this sometimes. And this is the end of that, or this is the end of his piece of that specifically. And it just makes it simultaneously that much more impressive and also that much more sad.
Really good advertisement for the DC universe, huh?
God, I hope so. I mean, right, selfishly, if I can't get him in, I hope he's able to reach these emotional highs.
He's doing Superman first, I think, right?
I know, but as personally, he's doing everything. My expectations are very low. Yeah. A little higher because of James Gunn, but very low overall.
So obviously this movie is like very emotional, but I thought it was also very, very funny. I do think the scene in the Bat-Human house is very, very funny. Drax trying to like sit on the couch is so good.
I see you, Drax.
And we talked about the first F-bomb. I thought to not put it in, like, nobody yells it at the High Evolutionary. Yeah. So that it's just Quill being slightly frustrated that Nebula cannot figure out how to open the car door. He's saying, just open the effing door. Is so funny. I thought that was so good. Uh-huh. I think that probably where people are the lowest on this movie, from what I've seen, I think Mike Bloom was a little low. I know Josh is a little low on Adam Warlock. I loved Adam Warlock. And I know that this is a thing that we've seen a bunch, where it's like a bad guy shows up, and by the end of the movie, he's like, oh, he's not really a bad guy. He's actually a good guy, and he's part of the team. Mm-hmm. But I thought Will Poulter being dumb little idiot Adam Warlock. There's the scene where they're going to interrogate the guy, the Ravager, and she's like, show him the business, Adam. And he like just completely like emblazes him, like lights him on fire. And she's like, what are you doing? Now we can't interrogate him. He goes, what else are we gonna do? What else are we gonna do when you mean show him the business?
Like, yeah, what business would we have with
and then the little animal, like Blurp, is like sad. He's like, actually, I do feel a little bad about it, as I'm seeing like Blurp's reaction. Like, I just thought he was so funny. There's a scene at the end where he goes in, like he joins the group hug, and I the way he just like puts his hand down, and then he slowly gets lower, and then he puts his full face down.
But sweet.
I thought he was very, very funny. Mm-hmm. I am not somebody who has really, I don't read many of these comic books every once in a while. I read a bunch of Batman after the Batman came out last year, but I haven't done a lot of that. I have no expectation for what he is supposed to be. And I thought he was tremendous and very, very funny in a movie that had a ton of comic relief, while also being like incredibly sad at moments. But I don't know, the comedy, I mean, the Nathan Fillion of it all, I think, was the other big comic relief part. is like them in the big suits and him hating his assistant. But what would you make of the comedy in volume
three? The comedy was incredible. Like, that's the part that's most important. I think that's the part, it's a little bit easy to like gloss over that, perhaps, because that's where Guardians has historically already been the strongest, or one of the areas in which they've been the strongest. So like, for the movie to be so funny, so incredibly funny across every single character, and find so many different types of small situational personality based humor, is still crazy impressive. And I think the Will Poulter piece, well, first of all, Nathan Fillion aging beautifully. I couldn't tell if they like did something weird with his nose, because he's like an alien figure, and I'm not, this isn't me being like, this isn't a dig at Nathan Fillion's nose. I'm genuinely just wondering, did they do something? Because it seemed like it was kind of like flat on the one side. I'm like, did they do something? I don't know.
Were you thinking of Blooper Snort? Who's the one who's like his nose was definitely weird.
There was something, and I don't know if it was like the angle or like the IMAX camera. There was just something I was like, Nathan, what happened? Anyway, very happy to see him always, and glad that he wasn't just in one scene. And I was worried like his cameo was going to be, even though his name was like in the opening call. So I know he had to have like a little bit more of a meaty role. I was worried he was just going to amount to like just a couple of lines. Super, super funny. Here's what I'll say about the Will Poulter, Adam Warlock. So Will Poulter being the actor, obviously, and Adam Warlock being the character. It was a little bit disappointing to me. Now, I will clarify, Will Poulter's performance, I think, was wonderful. I think he was very, very right to be, at least in interviews, like seemingly a little bit worried about joining this family. It's always really hard, you know, whether it's a TV show or a sequel to a movie you're coming into, and there's already this very family dynamic, right? Especially you imagine in this group where everyone is so tight, especially after everything that happened with James Gunn. I actually just think that he wasn't quite given enough to do for my personal taste. I think what we got from him was wonderful. All the like, oops, should I not have killed that person? I thought that's what he wanted was hysterical. His relationship with Blurp, the little animal that he inherits. I just think I didn't have a problem. Like, he's super dopey. He's super just like awkward. I think his mom's explanation, right? Like when I can't remember if it's the High Evolutionary or someone, like, you took him out of the
incubation. Yeah, she complains
too, like, soon.
You took him out too soon, yeah.
Which is like their explanation for why he's just kind of like dopey, because he is so incredibly powerful. And there's a version of him that is very serious and wise and just like dead set on like getting the things that he wants. And this version is kind of, I guess, in some ways, like the more Guardians version. So that I appreciate, but I just wanted like a little bit more. I wanted him to feel a little bit more important, because he's like he was the end tag or the end credits scene from the second movie. So I just remember my expectations for this character, who I think I have a little bit more of a relationship with than you, in the sense of like, I have a little bit of like history of like knowing the kinds of shenanigans that Adam Warlock gets into and causes. So I was left a little bit wanting, but then again, the first mission of this movie was to say goodbye to characters we already know. And there's a possibility for Adam Warlock to be more important later on. So it wasn't, you know, like, how can I distinguish it? It's not like a fail as far as I'm concerned, as far even just specifically the character, but that was my biggest takeaway as far as disappointments, was specifically that, I have to say.
Yeah, I think that last point of like, they're trying to say goodbye to all of these characters, and it's such a big cast already. I think probably the best Phase 4 or 5 movie, like the Multiverse Saga movie, is probably this or Spider-Man No Way Home. And then I think probably third is Black Panther or Wakanda Forever. The thing about Black Panther or Wakanda Forever that I think drags it down is that it tries to do so much in one movie.
Yeah.
It's trying to say goodbye to Chadwick Boseman. It's trying to set up Shuri as a new Black Panther. And then also like set up Ironheart. And we also have like, you know, this like underwater planet. Like it just does so much in one movie, in a way that I feel like this movie is so well balanced. And I do feel like anybody who's saying like, yeah, I didn't really love Adam Warlock, is still being like, it's not like I didn't like Adam Warlock. It's like, yeah, I maybe would have changed something about that. It's like a very small nit to pick, I think, in that sense.
Here's one thing I will say very quickly. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, an underrated movie. And I think the more time that passes, I think the more that turned out to be true. And I hope that someday it gets the respect that it deserves. But, you know, we're, you know, talking about this Adam Warlock thing, like we get very little from Kraglin, who is James Gunn's brother, Sean Gunn.
Yes.
But his stuff is wonderful. Like, his stuff feels so earned. He's basically trying to master the arrow weapon that he inherited from Yondu in the second movie. And it's a wonderful scene where we get like a quick vision or hallucination rather of Yondu himself. And he's like, you think I powered this thing with my head? I powered this thing with my heart. And it's like, oh yes, even this works. Even this is like such a meaty piece of what it feels like for the rest of the, for the group and their importance. So I think
Yondu was a child trafficker, but yeah, I mean, we want him to have the emotional.
Listen, it's called emotional arcs and journeys. And that was a dark part of Yondu's arc.
Yeah, pretty dark for all the children he trafficked.
Who was the character that was like in this movie where they're rescuing all the children? It's like, all right, we gotta go. It's like, no. And Rocket's like, no, we have to rescue the animals too. And the person's like, oh, I thought we were just gonna focus on like the humanoid people.
It's just some guy from nowhere who's like they were only doing the high functioning
and
Cole's like, I thought so too, but whatever.
We gotta go. But even that, like, I think that's such a, it's such like another layer of the message of love that all these movies, but especially the Guardians movie specifically, but this movie itself carries, of like the animals, you know, Rocket was a small raccoon and he rescues all the little raccoons, and there's that, the wonderful, wonderful scene where he realizes finally why everyone keeps calling him a raccoon throughout his journey in the MCU, because he didn't know. And I always knew that. I was like, it's not that he rejects the raccoon moniker. It's that he literally does not know what that means. And then he finally is like, oh, they are called raccoons. And at the end, he finally, there's a big thing to say about names in this and like the names that his friends take on, but he finally takes on his full name from the comic books, Rocket Raccoon. And he gets like the rocket jetpack that he's kind of famous for. Mm-hmm. But just the idea of like animals deserve love too, and in some ways deserve more love than humans because they are so pure and so unselfish and just like lovely beings, is something that, like, as a dog person, I mean, and to be fair, I'm like allergic to cats. It's not like I don't like cats. I just, you know, I appreciate them from afar. As a dog person, very, very much struck my heart chords. You're a dog person, Grace.
I'm a dog person. What'd you make of the High Evolutionary?
Great, great bad guy. He felt, and I don't mean this as an insult, he felt like a very small bad guy, and certainly like a very small man because of how small-minded he can be about certain things, but just like his drive was so specific of like he wanted to get back this thing that he felt had been stolen from him, the PS2QR3, whatever the code, the like barcode number is for Rocket. Or maybe it was a cell number, but it's like the number that he refers to.
No, it's tattooed on him.
You're right. It is tattooed on him. Yeah. So it's definitely a number that's important. Only to the High Evolutionary. But I thought an incredible performance from Iwuji. I thought, you know, the so gruesome that part, I really didn't think, like, we see like Rocket scratching at him at the High Evolutionary, like once Rocket's friends are mercilessly killed, like, so it kind of happens off camera, like there are all these like shootings of
you do see Lila, like, you know, she gets shot, but then it's the other two.
Their deaths kind of happened off camera. But you get that savage, luckily mostly unseen shot of Rocket like really clawing at the High Evolutionary's face, and at the end they rip off, like, Hannibal Lecter has never been prouder of an MCU movie. Rip off his skin, and you see, and what was obviously fake skin or like a fake mask. Oh my god, Face Off again. Wow, this movie is basically just a sequel to Face Off.
Yeah.
You see the damage that Rocket did to his face.
Yeah.
I was like, I was grossed out, but also really proud of Rocket at that moment. Like, hell yeah, Rocket, you did that.
Yeah. I really like the High Evolutionary. I feel like he's just sort of evil enough. Like he's super evil, but we're not trying to redeem him. I love the line at the end where Rocket says, "You're not trying to make things perfect. You just hate things the way they are." Yeah. I thought that was so good. I mean, this movie is not an LGBTQ like movie, but like for me, like, hell yeah, that's so good. Like, I just love that like sentiment that like there are some people who like, yeah, like I know those people, right? Who are just like, you know, they don't want to, I always say this, that there are some people that I've like worked with or whatever, where it's like, they don't want a solution to a problem. They just want to complain about problems. Right. And it's like, well, what if we did it this way? And like, that is upsetting to them and they don't want to do it because, that, you know, then they won't be able to complain.
That's about a reasonable problem. Solution. I don't like that.
I don't like it because I won't be able to like complain. And the thing I'm like,
what do I have?
So I just thought the High Evolutionary was such a good character in terms of just how evil he is. And he is in the pursuit of a thing, which is like a perfect utopian society, but at the expense of so many people and lives and animals and all of this thing.
And versions of people and like planets, yeah. Even.
And I love the moment where his crew, like, I feel like, yes. This is like in every movie you want this. You're like, why are you Nimskulls like just like going along with it? And they're all like, mm-hmm. No, enough. Obviously he's like too powerful and he like wipes them all out.
Yes.
But I just thought, you know, it was really, I thought he was so evil to the point where it's so satisfying when they defeat him. I love actually that it's not just Rocket who defeats him. I do like that it's the Guardians. Like, it's like, mm-hmm. his friends who he needs.
Family.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's heart-wrenching, the like, you know, the scenes of his friends dying, but the moment where they visit him and they're like, your purpose isn't done, and he saves all the rest of the animals, it's just, it's so good. The High Evolutionary I thought was a really, really good villain. There's a world I'm super interested in more of the High Evolutionary, but we don't see a body die. He blows up on the ship. True. But he could have got off. So.
And he's like kind of cybernetic-ish, or like some parts of him are like, you know.
What if his chip is in little
fields?
That's
what I'm saying. Or like he downloaded his thing into the whatever thing. Yeah. And then that means he may be back in some capacity, even though if he doesn't look the same, he could, you know, be in like a robot body.
Shout out to Thiel, who was played by Nico Santos, who is engaged to Zeke Smith from Survivor.
Yes, Nico Santos, wonderful, yep. In Superstore and a lot of, yep. Other, you know, some great creative comedic chops, excuse me. Mm-hmm. I remember the moment when I realized it was Nico Santos, because I was like, wait, is that? Yeah. Oh, because he's like bald and like, it's like a... they have like these blue contacts on, yeah. And it just, yeah. Looks very like human adjacent is the best way I can put it.
Yeah.
And
they look modified, really, you know, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like
super, and
like,
and the High Evolutionary, like him having his like face like peeled back, like it's like you see the, yeah, the back of his head, like, is all like
he had the worst facelift of all time. I love it. Where you could just tell. Shout out as well to Miriam Shore, who plays Recorder Vim, who is the person who decides. High, because she's been warning the High Evolutionary the whole time, like, I think you're getting like you're losing sight of like our mission. Remember, like, we were supposed to use these I don't remember what they're called, but there are these like attack dogs. No, they're not dogs, because dogs are good. They're like these attack creatures that they had been created, and he's like, release them. And she's like, but those were supposed to be like literally only for the protection of, right. The other Earth that we are now supposed to go to and create. And he's like, I don't care, I want, yeah. Rocket, or whatever he calls Rocket, 845244. She's great, because she was like similarly to Teal, just like getting a lot across with just her face, and that moment where she finally turns on the High Evolutionary feels so well earned, even though she's such a minor character and ultimately she literally dies moments later.
Yeah,
it feels like a big deal, to your point of like these people, we get an example of people finally being like, you know what, I don't know if this is cool anymore, I'm taking over. Like, it felt very almost like Battlestar Galactica or something, like, I'm taking control of this ship, I am now in charge. Yeah. Like, okay, you go.
Some other great, Linda Cardellini, who's been in the MCU, has played Laura Barton, voices,
yes.
Lila. But Asim Chowdhury, who many of us would know from Taskmaster, plays Teefs. Really familiar with Michaela Hoover, who plays Floor, but, you know, I do love Judy Greer playing Warpig. is phenomenal casting. That's just amazing.
Hilarious. Also, Maria Bakalova from the second Borat movie playing the voice of Cosmo and just being so upset when Kraglin calls her a bad dog. She spends like the majority of her movie.
Also in Bodies, Buddy, Bodies. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Being like, oh, wow, she plays really young in that movie. Or, you know, younger than I remember her. Just like any, like you imagine any dog that could talk just not being able to let go of like being so called funny. A bad dog. Like, please so take funny. It back. Please so take funny. It back. And then in the end, having like the good dog moment. But just, I just want to call out the performance by, who was it that played Flora again? You said it was...
Michaela Hoover.
Michaela Hoover. Just... There's that scene where, oh God, I hope I don't cry. I mean, it's fine to cry, clearly, just for the record. But there's the scene where, right before they all die, where Rocket is like freeing them, and he creates this car. He, you know, creates a key card kind of from scratch because he's like, I have to save my friends. The High Evolutioner has just told him that they're all going to be incinerated, right? So like there is just like this impending doom, and you kind of have a feeling already that the High Evolutionary isn't going to let them escape. Like he knows how smart Rocket is. So he knows that Rocket might try to pull something like this, but Teefs is like, Rocket and Lila are talking and they're trying to like form a plan, and Teefs is in the background, like freaking out. And Floor is in the background. It's hard to keep track of these names. Floor is in the background, just saying, Floor, Teefs, Lila, Rocket, go now. Floor, Teefs, Lila, go now. Like, it's, she's so nervous and scared, and she's just voicing all the anxiety that you as an audience member have. And like, that was so powerful. There was something about that will stay with me probably for longer than I care to admit, because it's a character who you don't give much credit to fully realizing the stakes of a situation and trying their best to live, right? Like, life finds a way and they're just trying to survive. And it's, it was very, very, very tragic and sad.
Yeah. You want to talk about the music? I thought the music.
No.
I thought on the first round, I didn't love the music. I'm like not a big music person. I feel like the mixtape from Volume One is so good. It's so iconic. And obviously going through the years, I did like the use of Creep, and I did like Dog Days Are Over a lot. Just personally for me, the other stuff is like, that's fine. I don't know. That's fine. You know? I do like San Francisco by the Mowglis. I love that song, but I was like,
this is where the seemingly young people that you saw the movie with the second time would be like, that music is old. I don't know that music. Yes, I have the vinyl from Guardians Volume One. It's wonderfully bright colored. One thing I found interesting about the use of Creep was it's Rocket in the beginning, like kind of singing to himself, and it's a great use of it. But also I thought there was this like meta narrative of James Gunn using it, and kind of in a way, like it's about him and how people may see him because of whether it was the past things or just in general. Like, I think there is a very human universal thing of like thinking that you're a freak. That I thought worked really, really well for the beginning of this movie. And of course, you know, it's about family and finding people who accept you for who you are, and that all fits. The use of the Dog Days Are Over, Florence and the Machine was like cold take. I love that song, right? Like, some people may not, but like, I love that song personally. I have like a lot of like personal connections to whether it was like karaoke or some like things in my life when that song came on, whatever, I guess similar to the Guardians. But there was a moment where the first moment I heard it, I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, oh my God, wait, is this too modern? Is this like too well-known? Like, it almost felt for a second like it was a misstep. And then you get a lot of awkward dancing from Groot and Rocket to begin with, and at first I was like, oh God, this isn't working. And then I was like, this actually works perfectly, because just like in real life, when you're like the first person or the first people to start dancing, you look silly and you look stupid, and like then people join in and it matters less and less about the dancing and more about the joy and the emotion. And I thought that was actually, to the movie's credit, of like, let's take a beat and actually let this play out as awkwardly as it might play out in real life. I thought it was actually kind of low-key genius.
It might be the most modern song. The San Francisco by the Mowglis is in there, which might be more modern, but it's probably one of the most modern songs in the whole thing. Yeah, San Francisco's in 2012. But
what a gamble!
I loved it. I mean, the song, the lyric, it's so fitting of like they're done and the dancing and like Drax is dancing and Nebula's and they're both like awkwardly dancing.
Yeah.
I loved it so much. It worked for me both times. I was awake both times for this.
I think they should have changed the lyrics to "Good Dog."
Oh like yeah,
Good Dog Days.
No, but then I would say the Good Dog Days are over. We want the Bad Dog Days are over.
That's true. You're right. Okay, fine. But like, you need to mention Good Dog or Bad Dog in some way to address it specifically.
Yeah. Well, very fun. I loved it.
Grace, is there anything else? I'm trying to look through the cast list if there's anyone else I want to say. Dave Bautista gets like some great Drax stuff. Like he gets to be.
Oh,
like,
yes. I wanted to repeat one of his lines, which is where they're going to go to the for the face off and and Drax says, "We'll kill everybody." And Quill says, "No, we won't kill anybody." And Drax says, "Okay, we'll just kill one person who nobody loves." He's like, "You're making it sad." I just thought it was so funny. And then also Drax keeps saying, when Quill keeps saying, "Yeah, we got to get my best. We got to wake up my best friend." And Drax says, "Second best friend."
Second best friend.
And the nuts, the jack nuts or whatever, when she's like, "Sorry, there's no more." And then he's just it's stupid. It's so funny.
So dumb. I agree. Like Drax gets so much like almost like throwaway lines and just so much incredible humor. His relationship with Mantis is so funny, just the way that like they kind of can't, or certainly Drax like can't lie. And there's a moment where she sends him to talk to Quill and he does a good job until he has to like ad lib his
analogies,
own
thing. Yeah.
Analogies, right?
And even his poop looked like a fish. Yeah. He knows metaphors.
And I guess lastly, you know, you mentioned Quill. We didn't talk too much about him. I thought that it was actually really smart. You know, there's a world in which like you can wonder if like, okay, was he really just a little bit more sidelined than usual because of like the real life Chris Pratt somewhat backlash. But I kind of think what's more important to me in all these things, as always, I always like to say, is what does it feel like in the universe of the movie? And if it feels organic, then it kind of doesn't matter why. And I actually think, you know, James Gunn is impressive and intelligent enough that that kind of thing wouldn't super much impact like his story in mind. But like, obviously, Rocket is not just the main character in the movie, to your point, which is crazy impressive because we really only see flashbacks of him for a lot of the movie, but then inherits the Guardians in a way that just makes the whole movie revolving around him even more wonderful and makes sense. So, wow.
I liked the thing of Quill having to like, you know, learn how to swim. He's like, I actually really liked that this version of Quill is basically sort of like a bit of a, he's much more in line with like the Parks and Rec Chris Pratt and like the thing that made him famous a bit. I feel like he's sort of become, you know, he's doing the Terminal List and all this stuff and the Jurassic World Chris Pratt. I thought was really weird because he's not super funny in it, and I thought this was like sort of the thing about Chris Pratt that was always good is that he was sort of like an adorable idiot to a degree. And I thought that this was sort of like one of maybe even the best, you know, uses of him in terms of like being so lovesick about Gamora. So I thought this was a really effective use of Quill. And by the end of it, sort of wanting to go home, saying he's been running from his mom dying his whole life and he's going to go back to Earth. I thought it was really effective use of Chris Pratt. I do not think James Gunn cares about any of the real life stuff, considering like he was sort of like, you know, canceled and brought back.
Backlashed.
So, yeah. To say the so, least. But I really like this version of Quill specifically in this movie, maybe more than I even did in the last one. But and one and two are so much about Quill, especially Quill, two, right?
Yeah, especially two in a way that I would like to forget because I don't enjoy as much as everybody else. But yeah, no, I agree that like him kind of living in like the darker emotional space, like literally the movie opens and he is like drunk off his ass, basically, like for, you know, and he passes out and he only very sweetly only wakes up when his friend is in danger. But he gets to do a lot of crying and he gets to do a lot of Gamora missing. And I agree.
But he also does have the cool moment. He tricks the like girl who he wants to prove that he's into him, you know? So he has his moments, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is still charming, much to Gamora's chagrin. wow, what a time. I'm sad. RIP to the Guardians as we knew them, at least. And RIP to my interest in the MCU. No, I'm just kidding.
Marvel. I got a trailer for the Marvels. You get that?
Yes. And I think it's the, actually, I can't remember now if it's the version I had already seen, because I was like kind of upstairs.
Well, I won't spoil it, I guess, for people who don't want.
But I am going back. I will say this, and this is like sad. I'm going to use my movie pass to go back and watch all the trailers that I didn't get to see in front of Guardians, and then I may or may not stay for the movie. Because
Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Oppenheimer
comes out. That explosion is going to happen in July, and we will, if we survive, we'll be covering it.
Same time as Barbie. Same day, right?
The explosion is Barbie. Like, I wasn't going to ruin it, but I think the ending of Oppenheimer is like they detonate the atom bomb.
And it's about Oppenheimer who invents Barbie, right?
Well, he creates Barbie out of like an old, like Barbie existed as like a doll, the atom bomb or the atomic bomb, excuse me, or I guess it's the same thing, creates like this alternate universe where the toys can move. So you're welcome, America. I just spoiled it for
perfect.
You. Grace, I'm sad. Mm-hmm. Will we ever talk about the Guardians again?
Some of them.
Right. That's true. I know the Star-Lord will return.
That's right.
He didn't get to use his face mask. You can't tell because it's a podcast, but I'm double tapping the side of my head. We didn't get the mask. I thought maybe Rocket would get it, but it'd probably look weird with like the little snout.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Guardians Volume 3.
Yeah.
I'll always love this movie.
Always? What if they actually all get canceled? What if everybody,
I'll love it in secret. I don't know. Speaking of secrets, what other secret projects have you got going on?
Secret. Everything is public. I'm talking about Succession, doing the immediate recap with Josh and Jess, and then the deep dive with Dr. Manna and guests along the way. Also doing the immediate buzz recap of Yellow Jackets with Jess. We're rewatching Dark, you and I, with Rich. That's been a lot of fun. And yeah, I'm on Twitter at High for Grace.
Wow. I am also on Twitter at that other Ariel. I am covering Dark, as you said, covering the movies around these parts, and covering Grey's Anatomy with Chappelle once a month. And I think that's it for us. We'll be back.
Yeah, I actually have nothing on the calendar next week because there's like a bunch of like weird movies. There's
next week, like, we're gonna say movies are over, but
here's the lineup. Can we just very quickly
short.
Blackberry comes out next week, the movie about the invention of the Blackberry.
I'm aware.
book club the next chapter with Jane Fonda and Mary Steenburgen and Diane Keaton. Those are the movies. Knights of the Zodiac, I think, comes out. Ooh. That's the Sean Bean movie. Hypnotic is a Ben Affleck movie. I think The Machine. No, that's way
later. I did see the trailer for Hypnotic, and I was kind of like, ooh.
That's the Ben Affleck one?
Yeah. It's kind of like hypnotic people can like hypnotize you. So we're going to make a decision.
We can talk about how Marvel, you know, is Marvel over? But certainly everything seemed to have cleared the way for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, because
nobody wanted to touch the date or seemingly nothing, the day after or the week after. So
no, Fast X will come in a few weeks.
A smart decision to keep those two tent poles away from each other.
That's it. There's literally Rally Road Racers is apparently a wide release. I don't know what that movie is.
I've already seen it. No, I haven't. I've never even heard
of it. So yeah, we'll see what we're up to next week. Next week might be a week where we look at what we missed and maybe what we're excited for.
Backwards even further and just like watch the first movie ever. We don't know. We haven't decided yet, as we already said, but I'm not going to decide here unilaterally.
Isn't it that movie that's in Nope? It's the guy on the horse, right?
I think it is. That's right.
That's so the whole point of that. We'll just watch that. Yeah, we have actually talked about the first movie.
We're so multifaceted here on Pusher Recaps Theater. But if you're still listening, somehow we appreciate you for doing so. We'll be back next week, as we already said, with a show. We just don't know the show. But until then, I'm Ariel. That's Grace. We are Pusher Recaps Theater. Goodbye, Guardians. Bye.